In case of the day, Byrd versus Sessler.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Rick Dark. I represent Brian Byrd, the appellant in this matter. He's a former inmate of the NRC and Sheridan Correctional Center. He's currently on parole, which ends 2012, having pled guilty to robbery in December 2010. We're here on appeal from the District Court's January 13, 2012 decision dismissing Mr. Byrd's Section 1983 claim against the defendants, which alleged a constitutional violation of his right to access to the courts. Mr. Byrd's claim alleges that his constitutional rights were violated because he was denied access to library resources, adequate library resources, at both the NRC and Sheridan Correctional Center. In order for him to determine whether or not he could and or should file a motion to withdraw his guilty plea or other post-conviction motions. The court dismissed his Section 1983 complaint, holding that success for Mr. Byrd in this case necessarily implied the invalidity of his underlying conviction, and since that conviction is still standing, his decision is barred under the rationale of Heck. And this court's two decisions, Nance v. Beerig and Horde v. Reddy.
So let me just make sure I understand this. Mr. Byrd does not want to challenge his, or has not challenged his conviction or his sentence, correct?
Has not challenged his conviction or sentence, period. And for that reason, one of them, we're asking this court to reverse Judge Chang's January order because Heck does not apply to Mr. Byrd's claims. And, as we've set forth in our briefing, habeas corpus is not an available remedy for Mr. Byrd. As I just mentioned, Heck deals with a situation where a prisoner is attacking the fact of or the duration of an underlying conviction. Here, Mr. Byrd's claim does not call into question his underlying plea at all. This does not depend on any evidence that affects his underlying conviction, and he's not asking for a shorter sentence or anything else having to do with the conviction. He is simply trying to vindicate his right to access to the courts through adequate library resources, which was guaranteed to him under the Constitution and set forth and expounded upon in Lewis v. Casey and Smith versus Bounds.
So it's your position that he doesn't have to show any harm or that he was prejudiced in any way by the denial of access. You know, this isn't a situation where he tried to get access, wanted to contest it, claimed innocence, wanted to vacate the plea, but plea stands. So it's just the fact that he was denied access. That's what he's seeking money damages for.
That's correct. And I still think that's actual harm. He has a constitutional right that the case law makes clear to the capability to invoke the right to access the courts. And to do that, he has to have access to library resources. And he was denied that right, the capability of filing or exercising those rights in this case. And it says here, exercising the right to adequate library resources, simply doesn't challenge the fact or duration of his conviction. And whether or not he wanted to overturn, ultimately, his conviction, we contend, is not relevant to his access claim. He has the claim under Section 1983 because he was denied the right to exercise his right to access the courts through taking advantage of library resources at both the NRC and Sheridan Correctional Center.
Is your position that he seeks access to reflect upon whether he might challenge in the future?
I'm not sure if I understand your question.
I'm asking you, Mr. Dark, what's the underlying reason for the access? Or are we not even to ask that question?
You can ask the question, but he wanted access to determine whether or not he could.
Yeah, no, that's my question.
Draw the plea.
Right.
That's what he wanted access for. Whether or not
see whether or not he had a legal basis?
Correct. That's correct. And whether that's right. And that's it. He was denied that right. So he never got his foot in the door to research and determine whether he had the right to file a motion to withdraw, such as what was at issue in Nance, or a post-petition petition in Horde versus Reddy. He never had that opportunity. So not being able to get his foot in the door, we believe his case is more akin to the decisions in Wilkinson versus Dotson, and I think it's Skinner versus Switzer. And in those cases, the prisoners brought various claims under Section 1983. When the court analyzed the claims, it ruled that success on their 1983 claim merely resulted in those prisoners having one step closer to possible invalidation of the conviction. In Skinner, it concerned obtaining DNA evidence, which the court acknowledged could ultimately determine that his conviction was wrongfully entered.
But here, he doesn't point to anything like that.
Correct. Nor do we believe that he needs to point to anything, because he's arguing solely that his right to access was denied. He does not need to take the step further and identify any basis for withdrawing and invalidating the plea, such as I was innocent, misapprehension of the facts or law, or other bases that would or could possibly ultimately invalidate his conviction. He doesn't need to take those steps for an access claim such as that which he has pled before this court. And in fact, we'd argue that Dotson and Skinner are even closer to the Heck bar than Burt's situation. Because in those cases, Skinner, for instance, he was going to get evidence possibly that could ultimately exculpate him from his conviction. Byrd's not going to get anything even close to exculpatory evidence in this case. He's going to get a judgment saying that his constitutional rights were violated. So he's one step removed from overturning.
He offered the reason why he wanted the access in this case, didn't he? Does that make a difference that he actually offered a reason and it spoke to the withdrawal possibility?
I don't believe that in this case it makes a difference, but I do know.
I'm sorry, was it?
I do not believe on this claim that it makes a difference. I don't think he needs to allege it. I don't think it makes a difference.
No, but the fact that he did, does that narrow our inquiry at all?
I do not believe so. If he did do that and then had the opportunity to research and determine the effect and full extent of his rights, possibly. But that's not the situation that's before Your Honor. My time is in a rebuttal, if I can reserve that.
Thank you, Mr. Dodd. Mr. Sager.
Good morning, and may it please the court, counsel. I'm Assistant Illinois Attorney General Evan Siegel on behalf of the three remaining defendants appellees in this case, Gail, Seth, or Michael Rothwell, and Michael Randall, all of whom are former or current employees of the Department of Corrections. Your Honors, the District Court correctly dismissed the complaint as barred by Heck versus Humphrey, and it should be affirmed on that basis. Heck's limiting principle precludes damages in a case like this under 1983, while also importantly allowing prospective injunctive relief. But this court need not resolve any of the Heck ambiguities that this case presents, and instead can affirm on two additional separate grounds, and should do so as to each ground. And these go to Byrd's time at two different department facilities, the Sheridan Correctional Center and the NRC facility, both where he stayed during the final 17 days that he had during a 30-day window to change his guilty plea, which he did not do. And the two reasons are these. First, Byrd implausibly alleges that any defendant thwarted his ability to access the library at Sheridan to research how to withdraw his plea. And it's implausible because he arrived there on January 6, 2010, the very last day, the 30th day that he had to write to the trial court and withdraw his plea. And the reason to find in the defendant's favor is simple and straightforward. The defendants associated with Sheridan, all three, didn't cause Mr. Byrd to forego the opportunity to conduct library research. Mr. Byrd himself did. He waited until the absolute last minute to ask permission to go to the library. And beyond that, the right to library access as a vehicle for accessing the courts is not absolute. It's a limited one. The right is to a reasonably adequate opportunity to present claims and to a touchstone of meaningful access under the Supreme Court's Bounds and Lewis decisions. The right, therefore, does not grant what Mr. Byrd thinks it does, what is the essence of his claim, which is
now,
optimal.
Now, where he was before he landed there, his first 29 days, as I understand it, he was being held at prison facilities that didn't have any library resources. Is that right?
That's partially right, Your Honor. For the first 11 or 12 days, he was held at a county facility in Winnebago County, I believe, and the officers affiliated with that are not part of this case. They're not state officials.
I understand, but there was no library access for those days.
Correct. For the
now,
seven,
what about
well, he's
days,
alleged.
Days 13 through 28.
Yes, and that takes me to the second basis for affirming the district court. At the NRC, Mr. Byrd has, where he spent 17 of the critical 30 days over the holidays of 2009-2010, Mr. Byrd concedes in his reply brief on page 22 that only Randall's individual liability is now at stake. But here, too, the complaint fails for three different reasons. First, it doesn't allege any knowledge or personal.
So in those days, just to finish that, close that out, he did have access. That's what you're saying. He had library access from those other 17 days.
No, I'm not saying that, Your Honor. He's alleged in both these periods, at Sheridan and before that, at the NRC, that he couldn't get to the library. His complaint alleges that in general terms, but it doesn't allege any knowledge or personal involvement by the remaining NRC defendant.
Oh, no, I get that, but you're saying he waited till the last minute, and I guess what I'm saying is if he was 29 days or 28 days held where he had no access to library, and he actually arrives on the 29th day, he asks on the 29th day. I'm just trying to put that together.
That's
you don't
right.
have any access the other 28 days. You have no way to. I'm just, trying to make sure I get the facts.
Yeah, those are the allegations, correct. But Randall is mentioned, importantly, only in paragraphs 5 and 24 of the amended complaint. And those are introductory paragraphs and not counts. And that is insufficient for causation under Section 1983, as the Supreme Court has reminded us recently in the Iqbal case. And what's more, Byrd's grievance, which was reviewed by Randall himself, makes no mention of access problems at the NRC during those 17 days, let alone that Randall himself was the cause of shortcomings there. So the complaint's very deficiencies follow from that omission. And that aside, there are two additional reasons to affirm the NRC claims against Randall. First and relatedly, Randall didn't cause Byrd to miss the filing deadline. Byrd himself did, because all he had to do was write a note to the trial judge. He was admonished how to do that, to start the process going. There was no need to do any legal research. Any reason for Byrd's dissatisfaction with his plea was known fully to Byrd himself. It didn't require going into the library. And it didn't require something as sophisticated and complex and ambiguous as the DNA processes that Byrd has highlighted in the Skinner case and that this court addressed in the Savory case. The second reason that Heck bars any claim against Randall, just as it does against the three defendants related to the Sheridan claim, is the Heck bar, of course. And if I could just turn back to the one day at Sheridan, where Mr. Byrd argues that his right to library access is as vital as it was on any prior day, that is not so under the Supreme Court's decision in Lewis. That case holds that there is no constitutional claim of a freestanding right to a particular number of library hours at the prison law library. The prison is not required to provide optimal library access 24/7, 365, whenever an inmate decides he wants to conduct legal research. In Lewis, the Supreme Court analogized that to a claim about subpar medical services in a prison facility. You're entitled only under the Constitution to adequate medical services and to adequate law library hours, not optimal ones. So if the court has no further questions, we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court on both the Sheridan and NRC counts.
Thank you, Mr. Siegel. Mr. Dark?
Thanks, Judge. I only wanted to address two things. One is the actual injury aspect. It is Mr. Bird's contention that his actual injury is the fact that he was deprived of the right to access the library at any point in time at the NRC or at Sheridan. That's the injury. And then with respect to the naming of appropriate parties, we named Mr. Randall and Mrs. Taylor with respect to the possible policy and practice at the NRC of impermissibly holding prisoners for extended periods of time after their conviction without any access to library resources. It's alleged at this point on information and belief, but that's hopefully the subject of discovery down the way to determine whether or not that is a policy and practice of the NRC, and if so, what they do upon transfer to places such as Sheridan. That's it, Judge. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Dark. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.